I guess I just want to remind people that Mayor Emanuel really vilified the protesters for NATO G8. As the campaign grew larger, Trinity Episcopal, the church closest to McCormick Place, literally was in the shadow of the NATO summits. They offered protesters a place to sleep, a place to prepare meals and to gather, and we're very grateful for that. And I'm honored to introduce our first speaker, John Marshall, who's the senior warden of the vestry at Trinity Episcopal.
Thank you very much, everyone. I have a kind of a bellowing voice. I'm not used to using a microphone. But we welcome you here at Trinity Episcopal Church. I mean, it was, you know, as I said during the town hall meeting, it was a no-brainer for us in order to host you guys and to be able to try to help out in any way we can and help the protesters out in any way we can. The way we see it, you guys are protesting something that is being done that brings on a lot of hurt and a lot of toil among the people of God, among all of God's people. And so it was really a no-brainer for us to accept you and with open arms to be able to be here, since we're so close to the summit itself. I mean, we see it as if Jesus was here, he'd be on the front lines doing this. He really would. He'd be protesting and be probably screaming the loudest. And so, when it comes right down to it, when we were presented to it, we had the choice of either saying no and then having to face St. Peter when he said, oh, well, you didn't accept, people that was trying to help my people. And, we couldn't do that or say yes and accept you guys. And our experience of it was magnificent. We enjoyed having the grassroots caravan here, and we had apparently there's some folks from Occupy Tennessee here. There's some folks from Occupy Oregon here, and there's some folks from Occupy Indianapolis here. And so it was a wide array of folks that was here camped on our lawn. There's about 35 or so folks with tents and everything. We have photo ops and all that type of stuff. But for the most part, we were received very well. We are glad to host you guys. And indeed, our spirits are with you. And whenever you all need us, all you have to do is ask us. Okay?
Were announced, progressives in the labor movement predicted that union support for the protests would be pretty hard to come by, but there were those who saw the need for labor to join with the progressive forces. So right now the next speaker is Alex Hahn, who's with SEIU Healthcare Illinois and Indiana and Stand Up Chicago, and he addressed the founding conference of Candidates. So welcome.
Okay. Thanks, Kate. Over the last year and a half, a lot of the work that I have been doing has been a part of Stand Up Chicago, which is a kind of labor and community coalition of organizations around the city and a couple unions. We started Stand Up Chicago last spring as a way to really kind of start moving a little bit more action back into the streets, and knowing that we needed to be able to target our real enemies and not just kind of focus on politics all the time, not just focus on kind of what we had traditionally done, both in the union but also in a lot of different places across the movement. We kind of came out with last June 14th was our first big action in Chicago, where we marched on a meeting of CFOs that the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce sponsored down at the Hyatt Regency at Michigan and Wacker. We brought out about 3,000 people from all across the city, a lot of different neighborhood groups from all parts of the city, from the south side, from the west side, from the north side, along with the unions that are part of Stand Up Chicago, or SEIU, the Chicago Teachers Union, and the UE, the United Electrical Workers. So if my memory serves me right, the announcement of the G8 and NATO protests came, when was it? I'm sure somebody knows the exact date here.
August 2011.
Was it August 2000? It was sometime in the summer of 2011.
June 22nd.
Thank you, Joe. June 22nd, 2011, which was, you know, kind of a week after we had done our big protest out in the street. And so there was a lot of discussion, both in our in my union and SEIU Healthcare, kind of across our Stand Up Chicago coalition, of how we should relate to that protest. I think it's true for a lot of us in labor. We kind of struggle with how we actually bring our organizations and our leadership around to support a lot of things that are not directly around what our members' issues are, things that aren't directly workplace issues or things that aren't kind of the electoral politics that a lot of us, particularly in the public sector, depend on. And so this was kind of a discussion. I know, as you know, Kate mentioned that I had been out at the founding convention for CanGate, and I think it was important, you know, I think a lot of us saw it as important that we figure out how to engage with the broader movement, and, you know, with folks in this room, with all the people whose energies were going to go toward building up a big street presence around those summits. Obviously, you know, we had a lot of different work to do, working on campaigns around foreclosures in the city, working on campaigns, you know, that were affecting a lot of our organizations and our members day to day. You know, obviously in September 17th of 2011, we had another big moment in this country when Occupy Wall Street launched out in New York City. You know, Occupy Chicago followed soon after in the next few weeks, which was a really huge moment for a lot of us in labor, for a lot of us across the progressive community, right? That there was a group of people out there willing to put it on the line and really kind of draw the stark, kind of put a name to what the fight was, right? We have the 1% who's controlling our country and our world and our economy, and we have the 99% who need to organize to overcome that. So I think both in the building up through the work that we were doing in Stand Up Chicago to start moving our organizations that are not necessarily used to being in the street all the time, not necessarily used to doing unpermitted marches, which was kind of something we made sure to do in Stand Up Chicago, because we think generally the First Amendment works pretty well as a permit. I'm sure we all agree here in this room. Some people in the city seem to not agree with that, but we'll, you know, we're gonna all continue to work on that, you know. And so we had been building up to get our organizations more comfortable with being out in the street and using direct action as a tactic. Occupy was a huge moment to allow labor to actually think about things in a little bit of a different way, and energized a lot of our organizations and labor. You know, I think at the end of the day, you know, with the split off with G8 going to Camp David, particularly for a lot of our organizations, that ended up putting a real damper on the kind of organizational commitment that a lot of us had. We did end up, I think, with the CanGate March, with a lot of the actions that surrounded the NATO summit, things like the mental health clinics actions, a lot of the actions in that week leading up to NATO, which we were, you know, supporting in various ways. You know, we were able to bring around a set of unions, certainly all the unions that are part of Stand Up Chicago, as well as all the community groups, and then the coalition itself endorsed the CanGate March, which probably a year before we would not have necessarily seen happening. You know, and so I think there's a lot, and I'm excited to kind of talk about and discuss a lot of this stuff with folks in the room, with a lot of people. How do we continue to move forward in that direction? While we had endorsements and some support for various actions, we obviously didn't have a huge organized union delegations in a lot of those actions themselves, and how we can move forward from there to keep working together.
I'm really glad that Alex brought up the idea of discussion, because it reminded me, we actually Freedom Road Socialist Organization is the group that, you know, put this event together, and they've come up with a bunch of sort of small group discussion questions that will follow the speakers. So if people could actually hand those around.
Do we have some up here?
All right, cool. So the next speaker is going to be, you know, most people who participated in the marches and most people in the anti-war movement felt that the real emotional climax of May 20th was when the vets threw back their medals. So I'm really happy to have someone from the Iraq Veterans Against the War, Vince Emanuel. He's going to be our next speaker.
Thank you for having me here. I want to thank Joe for inviting me to participate. First, I'm going to talk a little bit about IVAW's response, and I know that I've only got 5 minutes technically, so I'm going to really try and run through a lot of things really quick. First of all, IVAW's response, generally a positive response. This is a very powerful event for people to symbolically return medals that they at one time had received thinking that they were honorable and at another time received them understanding that we were killing people for oil companies and multinational corporations. That process for a lot of veterans is very intense, very emotional, and very visceral. However, in the same token, understanding that this is a symbolic event, many of us are obviously interested in ending the wars themselves. How do we do that? How do we move forward? How do we progress? How do we remain critical of one another is a question that everyone in IVAW has been addressing in the last year, particularly since the Occupy movement, and then also particularly since the NATO conference. Part of what we're trying to do is develop a framework and a set of principles that will oppose U.S. imperialism and the U.S. empire as a whole. That way we're not stuck in this position of opposing Libya, opposing Pakistan, opposing Iran, opposing actions here. We want a general principle that the United States is not, should not, and should never intervene in a sovereign nation at any given time, under any circumstances, anywhere. If we develop that framework, it's going to be a lot easier for us to move forward as an organization and as a peace and justice movement. Addressing the empire, in the same token, we're trying to make connections between austerity, imperialism, and capitalism, understanding that these austerity measures and neoliberalism is failure by design, and in the same token, understanding that American imperialism is inherently tied to American capitalism. So there's no way of talking about the economy without talking about imperialism, without talking about telecommunications, concentration of telecommunications, race, gender, and so forth. How do we talk about all those at the same time? Is something that we're interested in and developing and working on as an organization. Race and gender, these are a couple criticisms that I would have. This is after doing, I know for some of you this is going to sound like a very short amount of time. After working on the left here for 6 years and doing a lot of work, intense work with IVAW, I think it is quite clear to folks that we need much more diversity, both racial, ethnic, and gender diversity at our events, in our leadership, who comprises our organizations, how they're comprised, who makes decisions, who doesn't make decisions. Those are all things that we've been very critical of. Particularly since the inception of the Occupy movement, I understand that economics, austerity, class, poverty are all on the agenda. I get that. In the same token, there's many of us in the military that understand that the military is literally the largest consumer of fossil fuels in the world, larger than any other nation in the world. That being understood, we have to talk about how to tie ecological devastation to economic crisis. We can't be asking for jobs and growth at the same time while we're living in an infinite growth paradigm with finite resources. These are things that we're trying to talk about. It's hard to address. I think it's going to be very difficult to address, but these are issues that are at the forefront of people's minds, at least within IVAW. Race, gender, environment, got through that. The other three things Joe wanted me to briefly mention, violence versus nonviolence, elections and permits. I think all of these are set up in a dichotomous fashion, which I think is false. I think if we could break down that dichotomy and say, yes, sometimes we're going to get permits, sometimes we're not. Sometimes we're going to vote, sometimes we're not. Sometimes things are going to be violent, sometimes they're not. And I know that's a very touchy subject for folks. However, I think if we're going to talk about revolution, I think we should talk about it in a non-ahistorical fashion, meaning if we look at contexts regionally around the world, Asia, Latin America, Africa, the Middle East, both violence and nonviolence has been used in these revolutionary movements. That's all I really have to say about that. If we want to have more discussion about that topic, I think it's important, but I don't want to get anybody fired up. I don't want to alienate anyone. I don't want to start any right now. But that's how I feel about those three issues. I don't think this constant dichotomy, should we do this, should we not, there's only A or B option. I think we're falling into the elite's framework of how we discuss these things and how the general dialogue and discourses take place, which is this constant A or B fashion. I think it's bullshit. So that's it, 5 minutes, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Awesome, thank you. So one thing I've noticed is that all of our speakers today have brought up Occupy. I think we can agree it's one of the largest social movements that's come around in a very long time. So we're very, very excited to have somebody from Occupy here today, Rachel Parada.
Hi guys, thanks for coming out. I joined Occupy a few weeks after it started because somebody told me that they needed help with their media campaign. I do free PR work, not just for Occupy, but for a bunch of the other movements in town, like the mental health movement. I send out IVAW's press releases, and anyone else with a good cause who asks us. So I joined Occupy even though I was really concerned about the split that was happening in the movement between people who wanted to be nonviolent to the point where they were sharing coffee and donuts with the cops, and the people who were saying, we don't want to organize with a group that thinks that way. But I decided to join anyway with the goal of helping radicalize the movement and helping people come around to the idea that we should respect a diversity of tactics. And so to that end, we introduced the Chicago Principles to the General Assembly. The Chicago Principles were absolutely crucial to the media campaign I wanted to run during NATO, because it meant that we could not talk crap about anyone in the streets, from if the Democrats had decided to protest, to the Black Bloc. And what that did was it allowed our media campaign to stay on message. There was very little talk about, until the 20th, about protesters versus cops. There was very little talk about, there was actually not even one instance when a member of Occupy came out and said that a member of another group had done something wrong or criticized anything. So having the Chicago Principles working for us, which took several tries in the General Assembly, it made all the difference to our organizing. During NATO, I got to work out of the NATO Indie Media Convergence Center, which was at the Multiculti space on Milwaukee, and it was awesome. There were screens up on every wall, these huge high-definition screens that we were running all of the live streams from the street through, and then we had the dispatch for the medics and the legal team, and I was sitting there doing the media and directing those calls to our 20 spokespeople who were in the street and who had all been trained on our messaging. And it was really, really amazing. And I think that our main goal was to elevate the struggles of our local communities to the international stage. So to that end, we put out a call for 10 days of actions and events. We kicked off with the People's Summit, which was a great way to educate folks about all the different causes that we were going to be in the streets for in the next days. And then on some of the days, our allies like the mental health movement or Communities United Against Eviction and Foreclosure staged events. On other days when we targeted Boeing and some environmental criminals in Canada, we organized them. But in general, we realized that we're really good at a few things at Occupy. We're really good at social media. We're really good at promotions. We're really good at our press work. But we have almost no organizers, or at this time had almost no organizers who had ever marched in a protest before September, let alone organized one. So while, we put out this 10-day call, 10 days of action call, and we told everyone to come to town, we had no logistics prepared. We had nowhere for people to sleep. We got really lucky. It's like another group, Seeds of Peace, came in from out of town to feed folks because we weren't going to be able to do that. We didn't have any transportation. If these buses that National Nurses United paid for, the 99 Solidarity buses, hadn't brought folks to town, we would have had very few people here from out of town. And so even our like Boeing action and the marches that we planned, they were still in the planning stages like up to a day or two before. I would say that is our biggest challenge at Occupy, is not only creating a pool of people who know how to run a protest, but growing our pool of people. And unfortunately right now, after some of the horrors that happened at NATO, we have some folks that are really burnt out. We have a lot of new people who show up for actions and events, but we have very few core organizers. And this is hurting us in a couple of ways, the most important being the legal struggles that we're now facing around the people who were arrested during NATO, who are being charged with terrorism. We've got 5 people being charged with terrorism, 3 others still in prison for allegedly assaulting officers. And we haven't yet held 1 fundraiser. Why? Not because we don't want to help get them out, and we have raised... We raised about 10 grand altogether and did get 3 people released, but we just don't have the organizational capacity. You know, while we're a big movement, an international movement, and while we still have a very strong voice in the media and in the social media, people come out for us, we just don't have the numbers to do what we need to do to support the NATO 5. And that's, you know... That's one of the reasons that I came here today, was because I know that a lot of people in this room do have experience with the kind of long-term legal battles and struggles that we're facing. And I wanted to put out a plea to you guys to, you know, you don't want to come and hang out at the General Assembly. That makes sense. I don't do that a lot either. But we really do need the experience that's in this room if we're going to support these people the right way. Just to close out, I spent like every day for a month before NATO at the Woodlawn occupation, interacting with the NATO 3, interacting with the police informants, and you know, that's something that will change you forever. My mom and I were helping a friend of mine clean out the apartment that had been raided during NATO, and so we got all the crap out. But then there's like these 3 backpacks sitting there. And I said to my friend Zoe, like, whose are those? And she's like, oh, that's Jared's and Brent's, and I don't know what to do with them. We're moving out. So, you know, my mom and I took all their stuff, and we washed it, and we cried, and we stored it in the attic. And it's so hard to say whether we might be able to give that back in a year or two after the state drops these stupid charges, or if it could be 20 years. So, again, we really need your help.
Our next speaker knows kind of a lot about political repression, being part of the Committee Against Political Repression and his home being raided by the FBI in September 2010. He was also part of the United National Anti-War Coalition, the Chicago rep for it. This is Joe Osbaker from Freedom Road Socialist Organization, our host.
Thank you, brother. All right, well, I want to thank everyone for being here today, and I also want to give recognition that in the room are many of the people that played a lead and organizing role in making the historic protest against NATO happen last month. And to recognize the protest against NATO for what they were, which was a tremendous victory for the people's forces against the forces of war and imperialism and reaction. So I want to give everyone give themselves a round of applause for that victory. So I'm in Freedom Road Socialist Organization. I just want to say, briefly what our organization is. We're revolutionaries. We're socialists. We're communists. We call ourselves Marxist-Leninists. But we know almost all of you because of our day-to-day work. In the movements that you're involved in, fighting for the felt and urgent needs of working people and the oppressed, fighting against war and injustice. So that's who we are as people. We're activists who are shoulder to shoulder with you. But we also have this ideology, and I'm going to do a 30-second commercial about this. So what does it mean, Marxism-Leninism? Basically, it means that we think that the masses of people, of workers and oppressed people, make history, and that the struggle that we're involved in today will lead to fundamental changes. So there's a mass movement against war and against the economic attacks coming down on working people and the poor, and really that's what the NATO marches were about. Those were not marches for revolution. There are many young people, especially, who want revolution and some not so young who want revolution. But those were marches around those particular issues. And revolutionaries have to be there and help organize them and help lead them. So that's what we were doing. Of course, we do actually need a revolution to create a system that benefits the majority. So, you know, so we're organized in a group with that as a goal. But here today, we're here today to talk about the protests against NATO. So why did we set out last summer, those of us that were among the early organizers of this? We set out to organize these mass marches to be protests against war, against economic attacks, and the other attacks that are coming down, for example, on the environment. You know, we began with war as our main issue, and we focused mostly on war. And I think most of the coverage of the protests, you know, referred to them as anti-war marches. And I think that that's, I think that was correct, because that's what NATO is. It's a war-making organization. But we weren't exclusive to those issues because, you know, the world cries out for things to change on many, many fronts. So but why did we take this approach of beginning with war? Why was that important for, you know, for us as Freedom Road? So we are anti-imperialists. And, you know, for us, we take seriously, you know, what Marx said in the Communist Manifesto. He said, workers of all countries, unite. Well, what does working class internationalism mean anyway? It means that we here, living as privileged people inside of the belly of the beast, we support the workers and the oppressed people of the other nations. So when our nation, our government, our military goes to war against those people, we're not just... Remember when Malcolm said that the field slave, when the master's house catches on fire, what did the field slave do? He prayed for a breeze. And when our master goes to war in Libya or Syria, what do? We hope they come home with their tails between their legs. We hope they lose those wars. That's what being a working class internationalist means. So we want to weaken NATO. And at the same time, we also know that, what is imperialism? Imperialism is monopoly capitalism. Imperialism emerged when the capitalists, got out of their competitive stage over 100 years ago, became monopolists. And that's when they had to begin to export capital in a serious way. That's when this era of imperialism emerged. So the monopoly cap... So imperialism is the rule of the monopoly capitalists. We face those same people. They're the ones who attack us. They're the ones that we're fighting. So when our masters lose in Iraq, that weakens them in the fight that we have with them. So this isn't about charity. This isn't about, like, oh, the poor oppressed people of the Middle East. This is, we're facing a common enemy. And we want to weaken them here, and we want them to be weakened over there. So that's how we approached anti-war organizing. I just want to talk about three things. I want to talk, one thing that we use as a little device within Freedom Road is we talk, whenever we take up any campaign, we talk about three strategic objectives. We say, number one, we want to win as much as we can win and strike blows at our enemies. Number two, we want to raise the general consciousness of the people. And number three, we want to bring forward the most advanced to organization. And, you know, our organization, we're Marxist-Leninists, so we want to bring forward the most advanced there. So I just want to use that little device to look at the campaign against NATO. So number one, what was accomplished? I think concretely that our protests were a blow against NATO, against the G8, and against the U.S. ruling class locally and nationally. NATO and the U.S. war machine were exposed in the eyes of many in the U.S. and internationally, and therefore weakened. The G8 couldn't even meet in Chicago because of the controversy, in large part. And Rahm Emanuel, I mean, all of the media said this, that when we compelled him back in January to back off on the worst features of the sit-down and shut-up ordinance, when we forced him to give us permits to take us within sight and sound, all of the media said it was his first political defeat since taking office a year earlier. So, second objective. Yay. We definitely raised consciousness. We helped bring the anti-war message to center stage. We also helped to unite the Occupy movement into an anti-war organization as well. And now I would say that millions in this country now know what NATO is, what the G8 is, and even if they're not certain exactly where they stand on it completely, they know that there's controversy around it. We did that. And third, in terms of building organization, well, that's our next challenge. Organization is the key to success. Organization is the repository of lessons. So part of the task, of our task, like holding events like this tonight, is where we can, as a movement, engage in summation of what we went through. And if you're interested in Freedom Road, you should talk to one of us. You should check out our literature table or talk to me afterwards or one of the other comrades. So anyway, the last thing I want to do is I want to talk about the tactics, and a number of the other speakers have already spoken about this as well, and I think this will be a lot of the focus of the small group discussions. There were a number of debates that took place in Cangate over the last year, and I think that it's useful to look at these. So the first idea that we had to struggle against emerged last summer, right away, and this view was that the march against NATO shouldn't happen. And this view was expressed to us by people who were against protesting NATO while Obama was in the White House for fear that we would help elect the Republicans in the fall. Most of the people who raised this to us last summer eventually came around to endorsing and joining the march. But there are organizations who, to the very end, refused to endorse and would not march, and this is why. So, it wasn't our plan to organize an anti-Obama march, but the truth hurts. You know, the Democrats are the current war party, and Obama's foreign policy has been a continuation and an escalation over Bush's foreign policy. Because of the way we approached it, that we did not make, how you're going to vote in November a dividing line question. Not only, did we organize the largest anti-war march, and there's some historical debate about this, but I believe that was the largest anti-war march ever in the history of the city of Chicago. I don't believe there was one in the 1960s of that size. Anyway, because of the way we approached it, even people who don't want the Republicans to win in November, in fact, I would say most people who marched, don't want the Republicans to win in November, and yet they marched with us and delivered that message. The second tactical debate, permits. Should we apply for permits, or should we take the attitude that the First Amendment is our permit? And, we set out to build Cangate broadly, and we argued that we needed a permit in order to unite all the forces that could be, united. I mean, clearly, there are thousands of people who marched this last year who didn't need permits, and Occupy Chicago was the organizer for most of those. But we knew, too, that there were other forces, the unions, the church groups, Jesse Jackson. If we didn't have permits, they were not going to be joining our coalition. So we had to have a permit. And then the last thing I want to talk about is the Chicago principles, which already Rachel addressed. There were people who were against them from the very beginning because they believed that we have to express nonviolence in order to appeal broadly. And the closer we got to the march and the closer we got to the summits, the fear-mongering from the city just mounted, and the media, the more pressure we came under to abandon the Chicago principles. And I just want to say, from our point of view, I mean, first of all, breaking a window doesn't necessarily qualify as violence, nor does most of what gets called violent protest by the police or the media. But I want to talk about this from Freedom Road's perspective. We organize permitted marches because it's important to get, the largest number of people out. It gives us a chance, for new people to come. It gives us a chance to raise all of our issues. But we know, deep down, that the state, the government, would never actually give us a permit for something that's really going to affect them. I mean, they're not going to give us a permit for revolution. There's no permit. There's no office to apply for that. So we know that, you know, in order to actually be able to defeat the attacks coming down, to stop their wars, the social cost of war has to be raised. That takes more militant action, and we've taken part in them ourselves many times. But the important thing about the militant actions that did take place, the non-permitted actions, and even when the young people refused to leave the intersection of Michigan and Cermak, there was a lesson that came from that to the people who were watching, and that lesson was that it's going to take something more in order to be able to achieve the things that we're all after. So we have to unfold for people, you know, that the state has no interest in giving us any permits that's really going to affect them. I think that, you know, protests, militant protests, serve to question their legitimacy. I just want to add in closing that, now everyone is adding their voice to, you know, freedom for the NATO 5 and all the anti-NATO protesters, and we have to free all of them, and we have to work hard to help them. But even while we're doing that, we don't buy into this idea that dropping the charges is really going to make a change in the system. Really, the real fruit of our labors is the growing movement and the deepening understanding and the lessons that the movement comes to understand and internalize. This is what the real advance is that came about as a result of our protests and organizing over the last year. Thank you very much.